every day in various ways, I would be the paralytic. I would confess my dependence, the ways in which I had fouled up the day before, the way in which I was ashamed in relation to not being able to walk, and all the stuff that went along with being unable to do my job and unable to be the kind of parent that I wanted to be able to run with my boys and to be present with them in the way that I wanted to be able to do. And so to experience Jesus' forgiveness every day, forgiveness for the fact that the day before I hadn't done my exercises as well as I could have, that I wasn't trying as hard as I could. And that forgiveness was very freeing to experience that every day, Jesus' presence there, but also my skepticism. And I was very skeptical as to whether or not I'd ever be able to walk again. And skeptical of my therapist, skeptical of myself, skeptical of God. And I poured all my questions and doubts into these questions of these scribes. And the story also became for me a source of energy. Over and over again, I was the paralytic who got up, rolled up his pallet, and with pride, walked out in front of them all. There was a sense in which to be able to walk was like a witness, a testimony. It was a sign that I could be enabled again to get up and do something. And I didn't know whether it'd be in walking or whatever, but in all the various ways, I was able to do that in little increments. Well, that's one of the ways that I would suggest that the stories are present for us. It's on a day-to-day living with, praying the stories, experiencing them, and hearing them from other people. So what I would suggest is that now you share with your partner, where is it in my life that I now am paralyzed, unable to move, overwhelmed by doubts or skepticism or by physical things that I can't do anything about? Where are you now paralyzed? Share that with your partner. And then, partner, tell the story to your friend. If your partner has shared an experience of paralysis, where that is now present, tell the story. You don't have to have any other words. Don't give your friend advice or counsel. Be present with these holy words, this sacred tradition, this sacred story, and tell your partner the story. As you listen to it, listen for what the story might mean for you now, how telling and listening to this story is a way that Christ can be present to you now. And after you've told it, then share with each other what you experienced, what you heard. Nobody knows what that's going to be. It may be nothing. These are not magic stories. The mere pronouncement of the words is not necessarily going to do anything. But our experience is that in some ways that are ultimately mysterious, God is able to use these stories in unique ways to be present to us, to reveal how God is present, working with and through us to new life, to healing, to hope, to health, as the climax then of this part of our work on the story journey. Share your paralysis. Tell the story to each other and share what, if anything, it means to you as you listen to it. And give thanks. Turn off the tape. Welcome back to session 3. We're going to work on the story of Jesus and Peter walking on the water. This is a long story. Learning it takes more time. But the principles of learning longer stories are the same as learning short stories. You identify the structure and find the links between the episodes. If you think of each of the episodes as a chunk of story, then all that you need to do is to find the link between that chunk and the chunk that comes before and the one that comes after. Now, this story has basically two parts. The first part is about Jesus and his walking on the water and the response of the disciples. It builds up to that climax of terror on the part of the disciples and then of Jesus' response of calm and authority in relation to their fear. The second part is Peter then responding to Jesus by walking on the water himself and then being overwhelmed by fear. And again, Jesus catches the fear and overcomes it, but now in a very different way. And so each of those parts of the story builds up to its own climax, and then at the end, as is often the case in biblical narratives, it comes from these two experiences of fear to a point of calm. That's generally the structure of biblical narratives. It begins in calm, begins in a kind of quiet, builds up to a climax, in this instance two climaxes, and then returns to a place of quiet. I would suggest that as you learn this story, that you first of all pay attention to that place of quiet. The stories first of all come from the diaphragm. They come from the depths of your breath, moving through your vocal cords, being activated by the memories of the event that took place, and then coming through that experience of your body out into the resonance that comes from the sound of the breath passing through your vocal cords, going out to a listener and resonating with them. That air current that goes out resonates, and then those vibes come back. One of the secrets of learning a story is to see the story and to experience the story in your listener. And if you begin to pay attention to the vibes of the story as they come back, rather than your listener being a source of fear and memory blocks, your listener will be one who enables you to remember the story, because you'll see the next part of the story in the responses that are coming back. Another aspect of that is to pay attention and to receive, as you tell the story, the gifts of the pauses between the episodes as a place of calm, where again, you can remember and be in that new place and then move on to the next episode. Each of those pauses between the episodes is like a magic life-saving stick or a place of safety and calm, where you can stop for a second and take a deep breath, and gather yourself and your memories, and then step into the next episode. It's that rhythm of the story and of the action of your memory, and trusting that, trusting your breath, trusting the memories, trusting those places of calm, that enables you to remember and share the story with someone else. And so, what I would suggest now is that you work through the story of the walking on the water, episode by episode, identify the structure, the verbal threads that connect it together. Those are all outlined in the book. And then, as you tell it, as you work on it and learn it, pay attention to your breath and to those places of calm as you build up to the disciples' terror and then Jesus' calm response. Take heart, I am, be not afraid. And then start again with Peter's response. But it's that spirit, it's that paying attention that will enable you to remember and internalize the story so that then you can tell it. Take a breath, learn it through the breathing, turn off the tape, and after you've made it all the way through the story so that you have some sense of comfort that you can get through from beginning to end, then turn on the tape again and we'll continue. Well, how did it go? I hope that you're finding, as many people do, that the more you work on the stories and begin to learn them, the easier it gets. You know, it's not surprising if you have some difficulties with this. We have almost no educational experience at all of how to learn things. It's virtually been eliminated from our educational processes. And it's striking how many people are really deeply afraid of learning a story and then standing up and telling it to someone. So if you're having that experience, that there are things that you need to work through, anxieties, fears, whatever, you're not alone. Everybody has that experience. And the more you do it, the more you'll find your way through that. And my sense is you're doing great. Now, the next stage of working on the story, then, is listening to it in its original context. This story is a clear instance of that tradition of storytelling in which there are a whole series of stories that lie in the background of the storytelling tradition of Israel that the storytellers knew. And in order to understand what this story meant in its original context, you need to read and hear and experience those stories. Now, there are two stories about sea chaos that are of primary importance that lie in the background of the tradition of Israel. One is the story of the flood of Noah and of the sea overwhelming all of the earth and of the ark then floating on the top of the sea as the way by which Noah and his family and the animals were delivered from the terror of the flood. The other story, the foundational story of the tradition of Israel, was the crossing of the sea at the Exodus, in which the people of Israel were able to walk through the sea. But the Egyptians then, when they came, were overwhelmed by the sea. That story of deliverance through walking through the powers of chaos symbolized by the flood, that story is also a story that lies in the background of this story. What I'd suggest is that you find those stories in the Bible, read them out loud, experience as far as you can what those flood stories were like, the way in which they expressed the experience of the people of the ancient Near East, of the overwhelming terror of the flood, of the sea, overwhelming them, drowning them in the water. And then tell this story in the context of that tradition of the stories of floods, of deliverance from the powers of chaos. Now, in relation to listening to the story, one of the things that is present in this story is the direct expression of fear at a ghost. Another aspect, then, of the meaning of this story in its original context is the fear of spirits that they experienced as being present. There are a lot of stories in the Gospel of Matthew, Gospel of Mark, Gospel of Luke, about demons. Demons were spirits that would take over a person. There were many spirits that were experienced in the ancient Near East, and it was simply their way of identifying, of symbolizing their experience of evil spirits, good spirits, whatever. When the disciples saw Jesus, they thought they were seeing a ghost, an evil spirit. It was another symbol of the power of chaos. Jesus' response then makes it clear that this spirit that they see is not an evil spirit, it's rather Jesus. To which Peter then responds positively. Now, one of the issues in telling this story that I'd suggest you explore is Jesus' response to Peter when he started to sink and he caught him and said, "Oh, man of little faith." Now, usually when that's read, it's very critical. Jesus, like, criticizes Peter, "Oh, man of little faith, why did you doubt?" Now, it's sort of a judgment of him. And Jesus is a little pompous, is how I often experience it, and at least moralistic. And the question is, what was Jesus' attitude? How is that to be conveyed? I would suggest that you try it, and indeed the way in which it was originally told, is that in the context of their friendship, of this friendship between Jesus and Peter, in which Jesus was teaching Peter how to deal with these powers that were present, and to be one who would continue his ministry of control of the powers of chaos and evil, of bringing them into a new relationship with life. That Jesus was a kind of coach for Peter, and that his response was sympathetic and loving, standing with him there, holding him up in the midst of the powers of the flood and of the water, and of talking to him, just person to person, like I'm talking to you. Oh, man of little faith. It's a loving word, not a judgmental word. How do you convey that? What I'd suggest then is that you read those stories aloud in the tradition of Israel, experience them, and then in your telling of the story, pour into this narrative all of those experiences of the tradition of Israel and of what is going on with Jesus in your telling of this story. So turn off the tape, try it, and see what emerges. Connections. What are the connections between your experiences of fear, the powers of chaos, and of trying new things and almost making it, but then being overwhelmed by fear and starting to sink and then finding yourself somehow saved? Again, what I would suggest is that you tell the stories of your own most frightening experiences and of those experiences of walking on a tightrope, of trying some new thing, and of being in that place where you're starting to do it, and you're getting there, and you're almost there, but then you look around and, ah! What's that like? In the book, I have told a couple stories about that. One, when I was a kid, and my friend Jim Pefley and I saw a panther off across the cemetery. And that panther we saw, you know, coming running toward us, and I ran home in total terror. That experience of fear is something that I can remember so graphically. And whenever I tell this story, I can think of that. And let this story be a context in which I remember that experience. And there are two things that are helpful about that. One is it gives me a linkage with Peter's experience in relation to walking on the water. But the other is that Peter's experience in being caught by Jesus gives me a context for dealing with and integrating that experience of fear and terror in my own experience. So what I'd suggest that you do then is identify those stories, tell them either to yourself or to your partner, and then tell the story of the walking on the water as vividly and vitally as you can, with all the intensity that was present in those experiences. Let it all be there. Just play with it. You've got nothing to lose. It's your story. God has given it to you as a gift. Let it all be in there. And then see what happens. See what is revealed for you in exploring those connections between this experience of Jesus and Peter and your own experience. So turn off the tape, tell the stories, see what happens. Last stage, telling the story. What is the context in which you would tell this story? Obviously, there are many times when people are overwhelmed by fears, by powers of chaos beyond their control. That also happens for us. Where are you now, afraid or perceiving possible evil spirits off there across the water that look chaotic and afraid as you project the future and begin to think toward the future? What are those things looming in the distance that appear to be sources of floods or chaos that are going to overwhelm you? The identification of those in relation to the story is a gift that the story has for us. And so I would suggest that now, as the climax to our work on this story, that you share with your partner, where are you now afraid? Or where do you now sense those storms, those things that you're trying to get across the sea, but there are waves against you, and you can't make any progress. And across the sea, across those powers of chaos, there's something looming that you can't be sure what it is, that looks initially terrifying, but the closer you get to it in relation to the story, you may find that in the midst of that, Jesus is present. Well, the way to explore that is to share those. Share what those things are. For me, right now, it would be that as I look out across the sea, what I see is a kind of corporate, communal fear of a power of chaos that at times appears to be engulfing the whole world. Environmental losses, destruction of the environment, of our water, of our air, the possibility of nuclear war, our inability to control economies, to feed people in the world. Those things loom out there as powers of chaos that I experience. And so if you were going to tell me the story, I would tell you about those fears that I see out there across the sea. And I will listen to the story as you tell it to me, as you tell it to your partner, and hear then how it is that Jesus is present to us in relation to those fears through telling the story of walking on the water. Session 4, the resurrection. In light of the stories that you've learned before, this one is very easy. It has three basic parts: going out to the tomb, entering into the tomb, leaving the tomb. It is easy to learn, and I would simply suggest that now, in light of your newfound skills as a story learner and as a storyteller, that you work through the story, do the process of the identification of the structure, read it out loud, tell it aloud to your partner or to yourself, and when you have it learned, we'll work on growing the story. This story of the resurrection begins in an atmosphere of mourning and of grief, moves into the fear and wonder of the tomb, and then moves out into the surprise of the women leaving the tomb and saying nothing to anyone. Learn the story. Listening to the story. Exploring the story in its original context. The background of this story is Jesus' suffering and death. And it begins in grief. If you want to explore the meaning of this story in its original context, it is important to draw together and to experience all of the losses, all of the grief of the history of Israel, for it is poured into this event, the losses of the exile, David's grief at the death of Jonathan, Saul, and Absalom, the grief of the loss of the temple, the losses that were associated for the people of Israel with their being subject to control by the Gentiles for centuries, and the loss of the independence of the kingdom of David. All of those griefs are present in the grief of the death of the one who they hoped was the Messiah, Jesus of Nazareth. Another way of listening to this story is then to listen to the women's grief, who are the ones who experience and are the means by which we can enter into that grief in this story. Another dimension of this story is listening to the reality of death and entering into the place of death, the tomb. In the tradition of Israel, this is also present. But there is a kind of concreteness in this story to the reality of death that is distinctive in the tradition of Israel. And so again, you might listen for, what are those experiences of death that have been foundational in the tradition? But the place that is the most immediate referent is the story of Jesus' death. And so you might listen to that story on the other tape, or read it aloud for yourself as the context for listening to this story. Now, the thing that is most striking about this story, and initially most puzzling, is that you would expect that the story of the resurrection would have trumpets, that it would be a big story, that it would be a story of a victory, and that there would be everyone singing kind of the ultimate Easter. But it is the antithesis of that. It is rather that the way in which Jesus' resurrection is announced is in the quiet of a tomb, of a young man speaking quietly to women who are amazed and saying, "Don't be amazed. You're looking for Jesus, the Nazarene who was crucified? He's been raised." What was the way in which Mark told that story in this deep quiet of the tomb? This deep peace of the revelation of the resurrection of Jesus. Again, listen to how Mark told the story and to the way in which this story was originally told by studying the words, exploring their meaning in their original context. Another dimension, the promise, the quiet promise that is present in the young man's voice as he tells them to go and tell the disciples and Peter that he's going before you to Galilee. There you'll see him. It's not an enthusiastic thing. It's a quiet promise. What's that promise like? That hope that he's going out there ahead of you. How did it sound? What did it mean to them? And finally, the irony of the ending. I don't know whether you can hear it in the telling, but if you could see me when I'm telling that ending, one of the things that's happening is I can never help but smile because there is something so ironic about what's going on. And you might want to go back and read some of those stories. Earlier in the Gospel of Mark, at several points, there are stories, for example, at the end of chapter 1, of the leper who comes up to Jesus, asks him to heal him, and Jesus does, and then Jesus says, "Now go and say nothing about this to anyone, but present what is required, and then go home." And what does he do? He goes out and he tells the story to everyone, begins to preach it, so that Jesus has to hide out in the countryside. Over and over in the gospel that happens. Jesus tells somebody, "Shut up, don't say anything." They go out and tell it. Now finally, the women are told, "Go, tell." And what do? They go out and they said nothing to anyone. Now there is something funny about that. You can also understand why they didn't want to do it in the context of the meaning of this story in its original context. First of all, women were not expected to tell stories. Second, if they did, in the context of Mark's community, they might well be killed. Anyone in the first century who had heard this story would understand instantly why they were afraid. So exploring then why this story had such meaning in its original context may help you then to hear the impact of the story of Jesus' resurrection. Explore that, study it, listen to the story through telling it and listening to it in its original context, and see what emerges out of your study, out of your reflection, out of your telling the story about how it sounded when it was originally told. Turn off the tape. Connecting with the story. I will simply make some suggestions about possible connections that you might explore. I think you can see what the process is. You identify what is the field of experience that is addressed in the story. and then identify in your own experience the places where you have participated in that field of experience. Now, one of the things that I would suggest is that these are not only personal experiences, they are also communal experiences. One of the dangers of biblical interpretation is that it can become so highly individualized that we do not also experience and study in the stories in relation to communal identities. If anything, it was the identities with the community that were more important in the biblical storytelling tradition than the individual identities. In this instance, what I would suggest is that you explore the communal connections with this story. First, what are the most powerful, graphic, communal experiences of death that you can identify and that you have experienced? It might be something like Hiroshima. It might be the Holocaust and the death of 6 million Jews. I recently was present in Leningrad and went to the cemetery outside Leningrad where half of the residents of Leningrad are buried who died during the siege of Leningrad 900 days from 1941 to 1944. It was an experience of the communal reality of death. But it may be that there are communal experiences in your own family or in your own area where you have experienced that. Connect with those stories, with those experiences, as a way of identifying a point of connection with the women's grief. Second, the places of calm and peace. Sometimes, in those same places of death, there is often a place of peace that emerges in our reflections, in our encounters with death. But whatever that is, what are the places where you have most known calm and peace in the midst of a situation that fills everyone else with terror or with grief? What are the sources? What have been your experiences of that calm and peace? Those are the points of connection with the calm and peace of the young man, of this representative of God, this messenger of God, who can share with the women in a calm, peaceful way the good news of the resurrection of Jesus. There's something paradigmatic about this young man's announcement as a storyteller and as a model of what it is to be one who tells the stories of God. The opportunity that is present for those who connect with this story is that you too can be that kind of ambassador, that kind of messenger who is called to tell the stories of peace, to tell the stories of God's victory and love in the midst of situations that are overwhelmed by death. But first of all, you've got to find that for yourself. And finally, where is it that you sense that mission of being sent, of when you have been called to go and do something? And how has that felt? What have been those points of resistance or fear of being seized by trembling and astonishment that had to be lived through in order for you to respond to that call? Every great mission has about it that sense of being overwhelming. What is that for you? When have you sensed that? It might have been a paper that you were assigned. It might have been being asked to do something in public. It might have been some very small thing in the eyes of the world. But for each of us, it's often those little things that are most fraught with anxiety. Identify those. Tell those stories to your partner or to yourself, and then listen to the story in relation to those. Tell them. Let those be your points of connection with the story of Jesus' resurrection. Explore then the way in which this story can be connected with your own experience. Turn off the tape. Finally, telling the story. There is a sense in which exploring the telling of this story is the climax of our whole journey into the stories of Jesus, into the way in which Jesus' story can become our story, and lead out into a new life, into a new mission. The telling of this story is, first of all, a telling, a listening to the story in relation to the ultimate issues of life and death. In what ways do you now experience anxiety? Whatever feelings you have about the prospect of your own death. As I meditate on the reality of my own death and of the possibility of my death being caught up in Jesus' death and new life, I imagine that the primary feelings that I struggle with are sometimes a fear of being humiliated, tortured, or of great pain, and fears of simply the experience of dying itself. What is it going to be? Finally, I don't know. Whatever those anxieties are, whatever those feelings are, I would suggest that you share them. And then listen to this story in relation to that reality. What these stories do is to set our life, our death, our resurrection with Christ as individuals, as a human race, in the context of God's story. The gift of these stories is that in some way that finally I do not understand, God uniquely becomes present. Thus, what I would invite you to do is both with this story, but also with all the stories of the gospel traditions, of the stories of Israel in the traditions of Israel, that these stories are uniquely the stories by which God becomes present and reveals God's self to us and makes connection with our experience now. In closing this journey and opening up the possibilities that lie ahead that will be the next steps, I would suggest that you focus on the reality of Jesus going out ahead of us into that new life on the other side of our little deaths and our final death, into the new life of the new age. And that in the mystery of the telling of the stories of the actions of God, that we will find there the promise, the reality of the depth, the height, and the breadth of the love of God. It's that journey. It's that story journey that I would invite you to enter into with every part of your being. My experience has been, and I am a witness, that the entry into that journey is an entry into joy, into new life, into healing, and hope for me, for my enemies, for the whole of the world. So unapologetically, without any reservations, I advocate and will do everything that I can to contribute to your being able to enter into that journey. If you'd like to communicate with me, I'd love to hear from you. I'd like to know what your experience of the stories has been. I would invite you to join the community of storytellers who are seeking to do that and to become a part of this community that is reaching around the world and through all time of those who have lived into and loved these stories of the love of God. It's been good to share this with you. Thanks for all that you've done in this time, and I look forward with hope to the future. Peace.